The World Has Suffered Enough. When I first read that title, it just seemed so different from what I'm used to reading from Ernest Holmes. But it wasn't until I really got into the chapter when I realized what a powerful chapter it is. And there's so much in it. There's no possibility that I could give you the whole works. So I've just taken highlights from that chapter, but I encourage anyone to pick up that book, and there's so much in it, the essential Ernest Holmes, and this chapter is really pertinent to today. And he wrote these and delivered these talks 70 to 80 years ago. It's just amazing. Mm-hmm. He says, the world is beginning to realize that it has learned all it should through suffering and pain. When I read that, I thought, I'm not so sure. Maybe he thought that back 80 years ago, but when I look at how far we've come in 80 years, have we come any farther? Anyway, that's my impression. And of course, that's external. We don't necessarily see what all's going on underneath it all. But that was my first impression, was, are you kidding? my thoughts and feelings of these past months have been, the things going on in our political system and environmental struggles that are going on, mass shootings, racial issues that seem to have just gone nuts. And my feelings on all of that at first was like bewilderment and unbelievable, and then upset, and then anger, and it seemed like everywhere I turned, whether it was the news or Facebook or emails, it just seemed like it was, the media was just bombarding us with all of this. And finally I got to the point where I realized that this, I'd had enough. And so I quit watching the news. I've eliminated all these political things that kept popping up on my emails and Facebook, and decided to look within and quit reacting to what's going on out there. Because this too will pass. And Ernest Holmes in this chapter gave us a roadmap of how to deal with these challenges that we're currently facing, both in our own lives and in our world. He said, if we talk about discord, we shall become more discordant. The more the world arms for war, the more certain it is there'll be more war. In the 1940s, Holmes said this, we're at that point in scientific discovery where it is possible for the world to destroy itself. I'm not worried about that, he said, because if it does, it does, and if it doesn't, it won't. We will all be somewhere. However, I do think it would be rather an inglorious final exit from this mundane universe, and undoubtedly an unnecessary thing. He said that the three great enemies of mankind are war, disease, and poverty. And these three great enemies must finally be overcome as divine wisdom and infinite intelligence find a more complete outlet through the mind of man. So we have a responsibility with this. He said, and this was 80 years ago, I am not a pacifist, but when only 6% of the national budget is for the alleviation of impoverishment and 72% is for destruction, one knows there is something wrong in the worldly state of affairs and in the state of the human mind. When we stop to think of these things, we know that there is something lacking, something missing, something we've overlooked. And I wonder, what are the statistics today? Does anyone have any idea? How much of our budget is going for alleviating impoverishment, and how much is going toward war and destruction? Is it any better than 6 to 72? Or is it Well, we won't even hope that it's, think that it's more. He said, are we ready for peace? When the world is ready for peace, it will have peace. When the individual is ready for peace, his thought will be so composed that he will find himself living in peace, even though to the world he appears to be in the midst of chaos and confusion. There is no way under heaven that we can think two kinds of thoughts and get only one result. That's impossible. And I wanted to share with you an experience I had a couple weeks ago. I went into my doctor's office to have an ultrasound on my kidneys and bladder. And the technician who came in was an older man, probably in his 70s. And it was interesting how he started his conversation with me. It was expressing his fears and his upsets about what's going on in our political situation and in environmental issues. Are we losing some of our national parks, oil drilling in Alaska? How Social Security and Medicare is in jeopardy. These were his, beginning conversations with me and expressing all of these fears and doubts that he had going on. And luckily, the subject changed, and thank God I'm sitting there having this ultrasound listening to him. It was true for him that these are his daily fears. Then he changed the subject over to old movies and our favorite actors and actresses from years gone by. And so we had a much more pleasant end to this 45-minute session. But once again, as it seems like we're being bombarded online and in the news, and how are we to respond to these inputs? And here was a comment from Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. She says, it's easy to scroll through Twitter or turn on the news and bemoan the state of things. It's harder to look in the mirror and ask, how can I bring light and love into a conversation rather than adding darkness and divisiveness and anger and hatred? And Ernest Holmes says, we suffer because we are not in both conscious and subjective communication with the affirmative side of the universe. All human misery is a result of ignorance, and nothing but knowledge can free us. We are all searching, and we're on the pathway of self-discovery. The great lesson that life delivers itself into our capacity to receive it. The outpouring from the cosmic horn of plenty can only fill the cup that is lifted up and toward it. A pail turned on its side cannot be filled with rain from heaven. Rain from heaven. Well, we've gotten a lot of that. Heaven is just giving us all kinds of it. We are conscious that peace is the power at the heart of God, and that at the very center of the universe there are equilibrium, poise, peace, love, truth, and beauty. As we draw closer to this awareness, we enter into the realization of this eternal peace, which must finally triumph over all war, which must finally heal all disease, and which must finally destroy every sense of lack, of limitation, and of want. We must think peace if we wish to express peace. The mind that is continuously upset and agitated by the little petty things of life is not at peace. It is at war with itself. If our thought fluctuates, our external world fluctuates also. Peace comes from the absence of fear, from a consciousness of trust, from a deep underlying faith in the absolute goodness and mercy, the final integrity of the universe in which we live, and of every cause to which we give our thought, our time, and our attention. If we would have peace outwardly, we must first realize peace inwardly. And the structure of our whole philosophy is based on two things: the universe as law and order, and the universe as divine presence, the one with which we can commune, and the other that we may use. These are more words from Ernest Holmes. All we have said applies to war and peace. I thought about war and peace as being the topic here, but really the topic is peace and our part in it and what we can do to create more peace. He says all we have said applies to war and peace, for we are discussing the possibility of a spiritual power which consciously used and directed can change the destiny of the world. And he said, I believe in it as I believe in life.
Would you read that again?
All we have said applies to war and peace, for we are discussing the possibility of a spiritual power which consciously used and directed can change the destiny of the world. I believe in it as I believe in life.
That's
powerful. Let us, you and me, pray for peace, and let us make our hearts fit to accept it when it comes. Let our lives be peaceful. Let our lives be whole. Let us pray for peace in our hearts. Let us affirm peace in our own minds. Let us live as though peace were the mandate of God, because it is. Together, let us affirm it and let us encourage others to, no matter what the opposition appears to be. He also suggested that we reread the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States and try to think out their meaning all over again, the supreme ideal in government. And he made the statement in there that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States are two of the greatest documents ever written. We should form the habit each day to pray for peace with justice, because there is no peace possible without justice. We should pray for the peace of our own minds, that we shall not become confused. We should not only pray, but each contributing the best he has to the common purpose. And I wonder, does anyone here remember the earth change predictions of the 80s? Is anyone old enough besides me to remember? No. Well, I'm a native Californian, and at the time that these predictions were coming to the forefront in the 80s, let me tell you, being a Californian, it was a concern, because all of the predictions were that California was going to sink into the ocean and Nevada was going to be the new beachfront.
Yeah.
There were going to be tidal waves and earthquakes and all of this devastation. And this was in the forefront of a lot of predictions that were going on, and these were based on ancient predictions, and the timelines seemed to fit that it was going to be before 2000. And these were from Nostradamus, and then more recently was Edgar Casey and people in that movement. So what was happening, at least what I knew of in California and in my circles, was that there were many prayer groups formed in the, especially people in the New Thought movement, not to change the earth changes, but to not acknowledge that the earth changes are natural. There's nothing abnormal about that. The earth is always changing, but to change the effect of the earth changes and to lessen that effect on the world and on the people of the world. And it was also suggested that the intensity of what was predicted had a lot to do with humanity and the intensity of all the upsets and angers and stuff going on in humans. So these prayers went on, and yes, we had earth changes. California had some, and California rocked and rolled a few times with earthquakes. Let me tell you, that's fun. I've been through a few. mudslides. More recently, we've had, the wildfires have been going through, and those have been very devastating. But California is still afloat. And there were many earth changes predicted for all over the world, all over the United States, and many of those also came to pass, but also at a lesser level than what happened. So now back to Ernest Holmes. I just thought I'd throw that in there because, you know, living through those periods of time, it changed perspectives on a lot of things. I know it did in my life. I had some career choices to make at that time, and just thinking about, you know, of the possibilities of these things really helped guide me into higher purpose. And I look back and I realize that this did have an effect. So Ernest Holmes, let us realize if the world is healed of war and brought into peace, it won't have been because guns were bigger and better. Or more of them. Can someone tell NRA that? I mean, come on. Right. You know, but we all don't need AK-47s to bring peace to the world, do we? Okay, he says we need them until it does heal itself, but that will come to pass only because somewhere along the line the balance of the scales of eternal truth shall fall on the side of peace. If the whole nation works together and prays together, a great moral and spiritual power and actual soul force will penetrate the whole world. Does anyone remember Buckminster Fuller?
Yeah.
He was a fond person for me in California in his time. I think this was probably when I was aware of him was back in, I guess, in the 80s, maybe late 70s. And geodesic domes, which he was known for, were geodesic dome houses were coming up all over California. Mm-hmm. Some really beautiful places and interiors, beautiful. The one I remember the most, though, was a large geodesic dome that was presented at a state fair in an exhibit. And it actually revolved with the Earth, with the sun's rays.
Wow.
So it followed the sun. And the technology that was in it were things that we're just now, some of them, you know, becoming familiar with today. He had window shades that went up and down depending on the owner's desire whether to have sun or shade, and lights that turned off with a clap of a hand or with a remote control, things like that. The clap. Thanks, Judy. Anyway, I found this statement that he had made. It says, it is now highly feasible to take care of everybody on Earth at a higher standard of living than any have ever known. It no longer has to be you or me. Selfishness is unnecessary. War is obsolete. It is a matter of converting the high technology from weaponry to livingry.
Wow.
Buckminster Fuller, love him. In the Science of Mind issue that was October of 2017, I found this article that I thought applies to what we're talking about today. And it's called The Heart of Peace, Changing the World. And it says, join a new global movement. Do you feel the call to bring more peace to the world? And it talks about the divisiveness and polarization in our politics and social interactions. Such circumstances often call us to be peacemakers in our spiritual lives. But as individuals, what can we do? The answer begins with our own consciousness. The tremendous effectiveness of shifting consciousness and thereby effectuating change in the world is well documented. This is especially powerful when many people join together with a common intention through meditation and prayer. And then they mention Ernest Holmes. His book, Living the Science of Mind, he writes, "There is no reason to doubt that in the field of spiritual consciousness, a chain reaction could be created which could bless the whole world." He calls this the energy of faith, affirmative prayer, and spiritual meditation. And then they mention one of my favorite new books, is new to me anyway, is Lynn McTaggart, The Power of Eight. I think I mentioned this the last time I talked, and her experiments with groups. And in the forefront about her book, it says, "When individuals in a group focus their intention together on a single target, a powerful collective dynamic emerges that can heal long-standing conditions, mend fractured relationships, reduce violence, and even rekindle a sense of purpose in one's life." But the greatest discovery of McTaggart's experiments is that group intention has a reciprocal mirror effect, not only transforming the recipient, but also reflecting back on the senders. And my question to you is, what if the recipient was the world itself? Powerful stuff. And it says, to become a peace partner, to tap into this positive energy and raise the collective consciousness for the manifestation of peace, a group within Centers for Spiritual Living facilitates group peace meditations. The purpose is to encourage and support individuals everywhere to meet with others and commit to a regular peace meditation practice. And if any of you are interested, I'll leave this book out, and there's a website you can go to and connect with them. Either to find if there's a group near you, or it can be done, some of the groups are by telephone rather than in person, or if you want to start a group of your own. So this, I'll leave this out and it can be available. And after our break, I would like to honor some people. I mean, this is Labor Day weekend. I like to honor some people having to do with work and other people having to do with peace and their contributions to the world. And one other thing I wanted to mention before we close for the break is I found this actually last night in a little magazine I get in my neighborhood. And it says, "Voting, a privilege, a right, and a duty." And we know November 6th is coming up, our mid-season, our midterm elections. And I think it says this year it's a potentially impactful midterm election. So it talks about the kind of the history of, about how we've evolved with our voting. And it says, to better understand the importance of this constitutional right, let's take a look at the historical evolution of voting. In 1776, only male landowners who were 21 or older had the right to vote. And this was the norm until 1868, when the 14th Amendment to the Constitution granted full citizen rights, including voting rights, to all men born or naturalized in the United States. Just 2 years later, the 15th Amendment eliminated racial barriers to voting, but voter discrimination, poll taxes, literacy tests, fraud, and intimidation prevented many eligible voters from going to the polls, and Native Americans were still denied the right to vote. I had never even heard of poll taxes. Evidently, there were taxes on voting.
You have to pay your poll tax or you could not vote.
Amazing.
In Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that mentions that in here about Virginia. It said, although Washington state voters amended their state constitution to allow Washingtonian women to vote and run for office in 1910, it wasn't until 1920 that the 20th Amendment was ratified, allowing women nationwide the right to vote, and another 4 years passed before the Indian Citizenship Act finally granted Native American citizenship and voting rights. In 1964, the Federal Civil Rights Act ensured that all men and women aged 21 and older, regardless of race, religion, or education, had the right to vote. And the 24th Amendment was ratified, eliminating poll taxes nationwide. At that time, there were just 5 states, including Virginia, that retained a poll tax. 1964, wow. The next year, the Federal Voting Rights Act suspended literacy tests, and registration and voting rights were federally enforced. It wasn't until 1971 that the 26th Amendment lowered the voting age to 18. And there's a whole lot more to it, but I just thought it was interesting to see this pattern. And we know that even today, there's such discrimination in voting, and there's so many things that are going on with voting that that prevent or mm-hmm. try to prevent people getting to the polls and having the opportunity to vote. Mm-hmm.
I would like a copy of that.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I think that's really good. So I'd like to close my talk right now and have our break. And then I'd like to go on and do our second part. And we can also include what you'd like to talk about as well, Connie.
We only need a few minutes at the end.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, great.
Yeah.
Let's have a break.